UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
With the first and largest comprehensive heart valve program in the state, UAB Medicine provides continuing care for patients who have or are at risk for valve disease. My guest today is Dr. Mark Sass. He's an associate professor and interventional cardiologist at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sass. Tell us about some complications of untreated aortic stenosis.
Yeah, the three classic complications that they always talk about in the textbooks is, one is angina, which is a sign of strain on the heart. The second is syncope, which is passing out. And then third is congestive heart failure. These are, once you get to this point, these are very ominous problems that are associated with aortic stenosis. And then the most ominous complication is almost certain death if aortic stenosis is left untreated. Because as the valve narrows, the incidence of death goes up significantly, and 50% of patients are dead at 2 years with untreated severe aortic stenosis, which is defined as a mean gradient on the across the valve of 40 millimeters of mercury, or a provoked gradient if the patient has a low ejection fraction of 40 millimeters of mercury or greater.
What's the current standard of care for aortic stenosis?
The current standard of care is open aortic valve surgery. That has been tried and true since the 60s and 70s when they started doing open surgeries. And we have the greatest experience with open valve surgery because, unfortunately, there was no way to kind of medically manage aortic stenosis. There have been numerous studies trying to show that maybe cholesterol medicines may slow progression of aortic valve disease, but that has been proven not to be fruitful or useful. The valve would progress to a point where the only thing that would help would be valve replacement. And in the past, people thought, well, maybe balloon valvuloplasty would be a alternative. That's where you crack the commissures with a balloon, and hopefully it would last for some time. But that's also proven not to be useful in prolonging life. It may help with heart failure, but it does not prolong life. So again, it went back to the fact that the only way to kind of prolong life would be open valve surgery, and that is the standard of care for certain risk groups.
Is the development of symptoms more the clear indication for valve replacement?
Yes, yeah, it's always tantamount to the symptoms are the thing we go on the most. It's that usually if someone has no symptoms, we always worry if they have severe aortic stenosis, and there is an indication once their mean gradient gets to about 50 to replace their valve even without symptoms. That's a class one indication. But usually when people start having symptoms, that's when we start getting much more involved. And that's what really starts us looking for valve disease is symptoms. And usually the symptoms are shortness of breath, could be fatigue, could be chest discomfort. Like, and I said, the other ones are the complications are angina, syncope, and heart failure and eventual death.
What are some contraindications for replacement? Are there some candidates who you would recommend this for and some who might not be able to tolerate it?
Usually the contraindications for this, I mean, are usually, there's no specific contraindication to doing a valve surgery. It's mainly based on their comorbidities. And unfortunately, in medicine, we don't really have a good way of saying that person is not going to survive and that person will. We do it based on a risk profile. There's the Society of Thoracic Surgeons have come up with a risk score, as well as there's a Euro score that gives us a risk of dying or morbidity during a open surgery. So we use those two risk calculators to come up with a kind of a risk profile for the patient. And usually this isolated aortic valve surgery, according to most surgeons, if they're very good risks, have a very low risk of dying, even less than 1%. And as the patient's comorbidities increase, there's their risk of dying goes up or doing poorly. Those are history of stroke, pulmonary hypertension, low ejection fraction, kidney failure, dialysis-dependent renal failure, COPD, peripheral arterial disease, and concomitant coronary disease, prior chest surgeries. Each of those adds a certain amount of risk to the procedure. So a normal patient could go and say, well, you have a 1% risk of dying, versus someone with all those comorbidities have a 20% risk of dying. And some patients are like, well, I have an 80% chance of making it, but 20% for us is considered extreme high risk, and usually most people will not take that on because we don't, most surgeons would say you have a 20% risk of dying during an operation and maybe a 40% risk of a morbidity, and that is too high. So that, for my surgery colleagues, then we have to come up with an alternative. There are some other ones where there's definitively no way to do an open surgery. Those are people who've had very significant problems with their aorta. Usually they've gotten radiation or have very severe calcium that has just formed normally because of different things, either kidney failure or prior smoking. And those people cannot get open surgery, and that's called a porcelain aorta. Those are patients that the surgeon can't cut the aorta open and then sew it back on after the valve is in because it's just too heavily calcified. So those are people who have a contraindication, a major contraindication, or if they've had chest wall radiation, those are people also that it just there's just no way to operate on them, or people who have had significant multiple surgeries where it would be that their bypass grafts may be underneath where we'd have to go in a second time. Those are people who just there's absolutely no option for them. And those are people that may have an option for our alternative way of replacing the valve, which is the transcatheter aortic valve.
So tell us what you're doing with TAVR.
Yeah, we started our program in August of 2012 and have done almost 500 transcatheter valves since that time. I think probably by the end of the year we'll be at number 500. We've done the most in the state regarding the transcatheter valves. And our program is very robust because we have a surgeon, Dr. Davies, who's very enthusiastic about transcatheter aortic valve replacement and is also one of the busiest surgeons in Alabama who does open surgery. So we have a person who's very, very excellent open surgeon and a very excellent and also an excellent transcatheter endovascular valve surgeon. So it's the best of both worlds, where he can assess a patient and see if they need open or a transcatheter valve. So what we're doing is that we see them together and we decide on their risk profile. If their risk profile is too great for open surgery, then they are considered for transcatheter aortic valve replacement.
In the last few minutes, Dr. Sass, how can a community physician refer a patient to UAB Medicine?
Yeah, they can contact our valve clinic that's on the UAB website, or they can, again, call the MIST line and contact myself, Dr. Davies, Dr. Lisa, or Dr. Lisar through the MIST line, especially if they have someone in the hospital that is very sick. Those are patients that need to be transferred urgently for this. Usually we like to see these patients in our valve clinic. It's our multidisciplinary valve clinic. The valve clinic is one where every patient is seen by a nurse, a nurse practitioner, a cardiac surgeon, an interventional cardiologist. Their echoes are looked at by our echocardiographer that works with our transcatheter aortic valve replacement program. And then usually if they're considered candidates, then they get a CAT scan, which is looked at by our dedicated CT radiologist who looks at all of our CTs, the CAT scans, that look at the size of the valve, look at the way we can get to the valve, whether it's from the leg or from the aorta or from the subclavian artery. So we have this multidisciplinary group that looks at every patient and assesses them independently. So that's the usual way, but sometimes patients need to come through urgently, either through from an outside hospital or from the emergency department. But usually, if a referring physician wants to contact us, the MIST line is the best way to contact us, or if they want an outpatient visit through our valve clinic.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Sass. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.